for members only. Golf Smarter number 228 for April 27, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Selecting the right ball for your game with Dave Austin.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for checking in for another Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at GolfAhoyWest.com. The Ryder Cup is one of the most entertaining golf competitions in the world. It only happens every other year. So for this year's competition, make your plans now to be at Celtic Manor in Wales this fall for this once-in-a-lifetime experience while you stay in luxury only when you book through GolfAhoyWest.com. Our guest today is the owner and president of Austed's Golf, Dave Austed. Austed's a chain of golf stores in the Midwest of the United States that's been a family-run business since 1963. Dave grew up in the industry and has a vast and intimate knowledge of every piece of gear that's required to play golf. I brought Dave on to talk about golf balls and how to find the right ball for your game. Now, instead of making this a two-part show, as a Golf Smarter member, you're going to be treated to two things in this episode that the free members won't hear. No commercial for audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter for your free audiobook, and the entire 60-minute conversation in one show. Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Dave.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for joining us.
I am honored to be a part of your podcast.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you. I'm honored to have Austed's Golf represented.
Well, it's a treat both ways. There you go.
Well, you know, the reason I wanted to bring you on is I got a really interesting email from Gary Siegel of Oak Park, California. And he said, I just want to suggest that you might consider doing a show about golf balls. And instead
that makes a lot of sense.
It really does, especially at this time of year. I didn't just necessarily want to try to get Bridgestone or get Callaway or get Titleist to come on the show because they're going to pimp their own product. And I didn't necessarily want to do that. I wanted to bring somebody on who has a relationship with all those manufacturers, but also can step back to the point where you communicate with consumers on a regular basis and get their feedback, and you know what they like, what they don't like, and know the differences of all the balls.
You know, that makes Fred, you're a smart guy. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh,
that really does.
You're getting off on the wrong foot. Flattery will get
too you. Much of a stretch to start. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. What? Tell me how smart
I
was.
No, I'm just. Yeah, I was. I think that's brilliant. And, you know, obviously Austed's has been around for 47 years. So we've seen it all. And golf balls is one of those categories that, really in the last couple of years, has changed immensely. I can remember as a little kid, one of my first jobs when I worked for my dad when he first started the business was I would, open up boxes of golf balls that were wound with rubber bands. And I would pull out the ones that had already exploded in shipment. So, and he'd pay me a bottle of pop, you know, for sitting there for an entire day because these balls were so bad that, you know, if they got above 100 degrees, the balls would explode.
Really?
And they're really cool because they'd bounce all over the place because they'd have this winding all over. But needless to say, golf balls have come a long way since the late 60s and early 70s. So,
but I got to imagine,
it's a whole different ballgame.
I got to imagine growing up for you, it was like better than opening a box of baseball cards. It's like,
it was cool. I mean, I honestly, you know,
this
we were
so
a family
great.
Business. My dad started it. It was my brothers and sisters would lick labels for catalogs, and we would, you know, pack orders as a family. So I've been around it my entire life. I am so glad that my dad stumbled on the golf business instead of, you know, opening a funeral home or whatever. I mean, it's a great business to be in. So,
well, they're both outdoors.
And what's that?
I said they're both outdoors. The funeral business.
Yeah, there
and
you
never
go.
Mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
That wasn't.
No, that's good. So, yeah, so it's fun.
And interestingly enough, there's been a lot of changes in all equipment over the last decade or so. But I do feel that what's happening with equipment as far as clubs is they've kind of, you know, with all the restrictions put on by the USGA, they're kind of at a brick wall here on how much more they can develop right now.
Yeah, they've boxed us in a little bit, although, you know, one of the interesting things that's happened, you know, these golf companies have gotten a lot bigger and a lot smarter. So they got guys running around in lab coats that used to work for, nuclear physicists or rocket scientists or whatever.
Yeah, they work for Boeing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these guys are smart guys. I can carry on a conversation with them for about 30 seconds, and then I'm kind of like, okay, whatever. But, you know, even with, like, drivers, you know, you have to be 460 cc's, and they, you know, they can't be any longer than 48 inches and all that, but yet they've still figured out this year how to make them more lightweight, how to take weight out of the shaft, how to take weight out of the grip, make them a little longer to give you more distance. And so I think there's still innovations that can be out there, and I've told people for years that if you're playing with products that are a year or two old, you're missing out, because there's technology that happens every year that truly improves your game. And that's why, you know, the boys at the USGA, the PGA, are continuing to try to, you know, ratchet these things down, because they're making, especially on the PGA Tour, a lot of these golf courses are becoming obsolete because this equipment is getting so good.
Only for the tour guys, not for us. I don't even want to go down that path today. I get so frustrated when we start talking about the USGA and their rules on equipment and whether there should be set of rules for the tour and not for the tour. And
well, I'm there with you, Fred. You know that. And it's interesting because right now, for the first time that I can ever recall, we actually have two different rules, one for the amateurs, one for the pros, relating to wedges.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pros cannot use square groove wedges, and we amateurs can continue to use square groove wedges until 2024. So for all these years, the USGA said, nope, got to have one set of rules, got to be the same for the amateur as the pros, and now they've got a set of rules for two different ones, for one for the pros and one for the amateurs.
Yeah, so, at least for the next decade and a half.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, as you know, most of us amateurs, square grooves are fun and they're nice, but, you know, we in our dreams, we love to, you know, do the zip back of the approach shot on the green that zips back to the pin and goes in. It's tough to do, you know, for a typical 20 handicapper.
Right, exactly. And also, golf courses don't need to be long to be hard.
No. Well, I mean, yeah,
just making them longer
for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, just making them longer isn't going to make more people want to come out and play golf. I mean, isn't
that supposed to be the goal? Well, I think actually it's the opposite, honestly. I think, particularly, and this is one of my deals with, you know, women only represent 20% of the golf industry. And we've done a terrible job in this industry to make it more enjoyable for women because, you know, we throw the women's tee box, you know, 10 yards ahead on a 500-yard par 5, and we think, oh, we're doing them a great service there. I mean, that's just not going to get people real excited to play. So, yeah, we have not done a great job in our industry to make it more fun and enjoyable. And we got a lot of work to do.
Okay, well, and that's another show. We're going to save that for another show, and hopefully you'll be able to come back on a regular basis. But let's focus, if we can, and that's really hard for me. Let's focus, if we can, on golf balls for right now. Let's just talk about what is a golf ball and why is it unique compared to other kind of balls. Can we start there?
Wow. You want to start really deep and philosophical.
Yeah.
Well, you know, obviously it's 1.68 inches wide, and it's got dimples, and it as I said earlier, it has changed immensely. It started back with the Scottish boys a couple hundred years ago, a leather pouch stuffed with goose feathers.
Mm.
That was the very first golf ball. And fortunately, we've come a long way since then. You can imagine when the leather exploded and all the goose feathers went crazy. But it has evolved immensely, and now, you know, we've got golf balls that literally have five layers in them, and they can figure out and respond to your club based on how hard you hit it and what club you use, and the golf ball is going to react accordingly. In some cases, it will spin more, in some cases, it will spin less. So it's amazing the technology that has gone into these golf balls in the last 4 or 5 years. Absolutely incredible.
When did they realize and initiate dimples? How did that get started? Do you know?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer to the dimple question, but it is amazing. I've been to some of these facilities, and they've shown me their testing facilities where they'll have one golf ball that will have a dimple that is shaved in one way, and another golf ball where the dimple is shaved literally 1/100th of an inch less, and the flight properties is radically different.
Wow.
Just dramatically different. If it didn't have dimples in it, that ball would go about 60 yards. It's incredible the wind resistance and what that does with those dimples. So I'm not into the science stuff. I'm not a lab coat guy, but it's incredible what these guys do.
And manufacturers are always experimenting with different dimple shapes.
No question. Dimple shapes, different components of the cover, and now they're doing different layers within the ball. The old days of the rubber band, the DT, the Titleist DT, the famous ball that had the windings around it, you know, those days are all gone. There are no windings anymore in golf balls. They're all solid cores, but they... from that point, the scientists can sit around and do different components that are on the inside, and then they can do different layers on the outside that would react differently depending on what club you hit, what your swing speed is, and what your flight conditions are. So, cool stuff. I mean, you wouldn't think of just a simple little round ball with some dimples on it would have all that stuff in it, but a lot of things going into what makes a golf ball.
Does the USGA have guidelines on specifics of the dimples, saying they have to conform?
Or yes, they have a lot of rules relating to, I mean, the number of dimples isn't, I don't think that is actually in the USGA rule book. I think we actually had a ball for a while that had 712 dimples in it.
And what is
that? It didn't work very well. They've figured out that the dimples are right around 380, somewhere around there is the optimal number of dimples, because you get too much and it starts to reduce the distance, and you don't get enough and the same thing. So, you know, but I don't think there's an actual rule on number of dimples. There's a lot of rules on how fast the ball can come off the club face and the way that it comes off. I mean, there's a lot of rules on that stuff. So, but there's still technology that can be had. There's no question.
And you've been watching it for a while. When was there a significant change in the manufacturing of golf balls and the development of golf balls?
I think when the boys realized that it used to be, if you remember the old days of the two-piece top flight ball, which was affectionately known as rock flight, because it was so hard, and people kind of joked about how, boy, if I wanted to hit it far, I would take out one of my two-piece top flight balls because it was like a rock, and you'd have this tuning fork go up your club. So two-piece always meant it was going to be very hard, but it was going to go farther. And if you wanted something that had any feel or any kind of reaction, you needed a wound ball. Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, they realized that there was now new components, there was new materials that you could make that would make that ball a lot softer and react a lot better, and they could put some cores or some different layers around that ball that would help it react more. And that, about 7 or 8 years ago, all of a sudden the floodgates opened, and the ball manufacturers no longer made wound balls. They now can use different components of that golf ball to react differently. And a couple things have happened, Fred. And, you know, for the average golfer, I can, you know, I was out in our store just a few minutes ago, and I was looking at the shelves, and right now I have 110 different golf balls available. And I see customers walk into our store or, you know, jump on our website, and I can see the confusion. Because honestly, I go to the back and I read the information on the back of the golf balls that are brand new current balls, and I'd be confused because every one of them has gobbledygook from the manufacturer that frankly uses all these big terms that don't make a whole lot of sense, and it actually is more confusing than what you probably had before you got in there. So I can give you a couple tips if you want them. It might help out a little bit.
Well, absolutely. And we're gonna get to that in a minute. And I want to get into specific balls by different manufacturers and what the value is to what type of golfer. And I guess we should just start at the behemoth, the beast of all golf balls. That would be Titleist.
Yes, Titleist is the 800-pound gorilla. As of this month, Titleist and Pinnacle combined, Pinnacle is one of their brands, they have a 42% market share.
Wow.
In the United States. The next closest is Bridgestone and Precept. Those are the same brand, and they have 14%. And then Callaway Top Flight, and Callaway owns Top Flight now, and they have 14%. So you can see that Titleist is almost three times bigger than any other manufacturer out there.
Well, when you see, I'm shocked about something. Titleist also you said owns who?
Pinnacle.
Pinnacle.
Pinnacle is a brand that is under Titleist, and it's amazing that very few people know that.
I had no idea.
They don't put the Titleist name on it, but Pinnacle is pretty much in their mind, it is more of the weekend golfer or it's a two-piece ball that it's a phenomenal product. It comes out of the same plants that make the Titleist balls, but it's owned by Titleist. So those two brands together, Titleist and Pinnacle, are 42% of the market share.
Is this kind of like a Toyota thing where they have the Prius and then they have the Lexus?
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good analogy.
Or they just have the same product with a different brand name on it?
No. I shouldn't say that because the Titleist Pro V1 has more technology in it. It's a ball that has a lot more going for it, but the Pinnacle ball is really designed for more of a person. It's a two-piece Sirlin covered ball that is going to get you some distance, but if you want to get around the green, it's going to hit the green and keep going. And for a lot of people, price is a more of an issue. So Pinnacle's a great product.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe I can just back up because frankly there's some ground rules that if a guy comes into a golf store or he goes onto a website and he's looking for a golf ball, there are some general ground rules that are probably prevalent for all balls.
Please.
Can I share those with you?
I think that could be the whole show right there.
First of all, in general, spin is your friend around the green. It's not your friend off the tee box. You don't want spin off the tee. You do want spin around the green because the spin around the green will bite and it will allow your approach shot off the wedge to stop instead of just keep going. So the dilemma for golf ball manufacturers all these years is how can I create a ball that doesn't spin off the tee box? Because if you hit it off center and it starts going to the right or the left, the spin will probably just accentuate it. And instead of going 15 yards off to the right, it may end up going 30 or 40. And you do want spin as you get closer to the green. So that's the dilemma most of the ball manufacturers have come up with is how can I reduce spin off a tee box and get spin around the green? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's rule number one. Number two, we'll talk about covers. There's really only two covers that are on most of these balls now. One is a Sirlin-covered ball that they've now cleverly called the ionomer. And anytime you see that word ionomer, it is Sirlin. That's made by DuPont. And it's a very good quality product. It's been out there for 50 years. In fact, my uncles were one of the first ones who developed a ball, the Ram 3D, that had Sirlin as a cover around the ball. The only disadvantage to Sirlin is it needs to be a little thicker, so you don't have the feel around it. The big inroads the golf ball manufacturers have made recently is they have figured out how to use urethane on the cover. And the beautiful thing about the urethane is it's a wonderful product. It's hard enough so that it takes the abuse of the club, but they can make it very, very thin. And so they make it thin, and it allows you to be able to really take advantage of the layers that are underneath the ball. So in most cases, if you go to a golf store, you'll look around and you'll see the lower-priced balls, the Pinnacle, some of the other brands that are in the $19, $25 range, you're going to see them mentioning ionomer as the cover of the ball. The more expensive balls, the Titleist Pro V1, the Srixon Z-Star, and the Callaway Tour IZ, those are all urethane covers. They're a lot thinner, and they allow you to respond better with that. So that's the second part. The third part, and this is essentially it, is how many layers does it have? The less expensive balls usually are only two layers. They just have a center, and then they've got a cover. And again, most of the covers are Sirlin. And the more expensive balls have three layers, four layers, or our friends at TaylorMade now have the Penta ball that is five layers. And the whole thing that all these layers are trying to do, that these guys in the white coats are trying to figure out is, how can I create a ball that's going to reduce spin off the tee box and give me more spin around the green? And all these layers, that's what they're trying to do. Because of that thin urethane layer, the club can bite right into it, and it's going to not spin off the tee box because it's a faster swing speed. And as you get closer to the green, it's going to spin more. There you go, Fred. You just got your golf ball lesson right there.
I am exhausted.
I'm exhausted, honestly. I need a nap. But,
are golf balls all the same weight? Is there a specific weight they have to be?
Yeah, they are the same weight. But honestly, it took me a while to actually reduce all this down. I actually wrote up a deal on our website that is just a quick write-up of the basics of golf balls. It's pretty helpful on Austeds.com. And it took me a while because I went out and I read the backs of every single 100 golf balls that we sell.
Wow.
And I got such a headache that I just went, this is crazy. So I started talking to people. I started looking around and I go, there's got to be something better here. And once you break it down, that's pretty much it. Oh, and another interesting thing, Fred, and this is probably something that you might even be surprised at, is if you get these manufacturers and, you know, after you go out and, you know, have a couple beers with them and you get them really to break it down, they will admit to you the distance is no longer a major factor in buying a golf ball. There's a scoop right there. I had your friends at Titleist mention that to me. The bottom line is the quality of all of these golf balls, and I don't care if it's Bridgestone or Srixon or Callaway or Wilson or whatever, they have closed the gap on the Titleist boys. And Titleist still makes an incredible product and I would say probably still has the superior product out there, and certainly their 42% market share would tell you that. But the fact is, there's really only about 4 to 6 yards difference in almost any ball you carry. And that's true even of the balls that have the sirloin cover, the $20 or $25 and all that stuff. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of difference in distance. And that's a huge change from 10, 15 years ago where everybody said, we're the longest, we're the longest, we're the longest, we're the longest. You know, they're not saying that anymore. Now they're saying, we're going to give you more feel, we're going to give you more control, we're going to allow you to do things with the ball you couldn't do before. That's a major change in this industry. So the difference between the worst quality ball and the best ball is significantly less than what it used to be.
Is that a response to the whole groove and the spins on the wedges?
It's more of a fact that the technology has improved all around. I mean, everybody has figured out how to use this urethane cover, how to use these different layers, and how to improve the quality. Like I said, you know, years ago I was spent most of my time pulling out balls that have already exploded. I don't know if anybody remembers, but Titleist used to have the Bellotta ball.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those guys?
Mm-hmm.
And they were wonderful, soft balls that, you know, really good players or field players really liked. But the fact is, if you were around the green and you wanted to really spin it and you put your wedge in and the ball bit right into the grooves, it's going to be good for about two holes.
Yeah,
then you have to
right.
throw it away.
It's not
and that's,
roll.
Not, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, it's not going to roll very well at that point, right? Because it's just
no,
got
no.
all these gashes
it's
in it.
Basically just get gashes in it. And you know, I can remember, you know, balls after three or four holes, you'd have to look at it every tee box to see if there's just a big smile in it, you know, and those days are gone.
So, okay, so that's an important thing to know that people are always concerned about is how long can I play a golf ball? Now they're pretty sturdy.
They are. They're very sturdy. And you have guys like Phil Mickelson who will throw his golf ball after every hole to a kid along the side, and that's wonderful, but he does get his balls for free.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do that. I would certainly recommend that you would trade them, you know, at least after every round. But these balls have gotten so good and so durable that, you know, their durability has gotten much better than it used to be.
That's so interesting. And is it that Titleist, you know, let's go back on this one. Is it because the equipment today, everything is the sweet spot. It's not like the old days with wood. You had to hit it. You had to nail it in the sweet spot to get a good distance on the ball. But now, no matter where you hit it on the face of, you know, of your driver, it's gonna explode. It's gonna take off.
It is. So the forgiveness factor on a driver is significantly better than it used to be. Another interesting thing is, and this was always something that has changed recently, is it used to be that manufacturers and golfers alike would all feel that the best drive would be one of these low boring drives that would just kind of cut in and then it would start moving up and then fall gracefully to the ground. That was kind of perceived as the best perfect drive. Well, after testing and now with the new equipment out there and in balls and in drivers, they realize that to get maximum distance, you don't want that low boring drive. You want to be able to hit that ball up into the air because that's going to get you the best distance. You want it, you know, at impact. You want that driver to be at about a 12 to 15 degree loft at impact. So, and that's going to get the ball up, and you're going to have this nice flight pattern. It's probably not unlike if you're going to throw a baseball to somebody. you're going to throw it up in the air. You know, if you throw a low, boring shot at them, it's probably not going to get there as far. So that's the philosophy of that as well, and that has changed immensely over the last few years. They want it high, and that's why typically one of the biggest problems with a lot of amateurs out there is their driver doesn't have enough loft. You know, they come in saying, well, I'm playing with an 8-degree loft on their driver right now. Well, if that's the case, they should probably be at a 10 or 10 and a half.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Or more. I play with an 11 and a half.
Do you really?
I do. Wow. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with a lot of people is they just don't have enough loft in their drivers. So, and these golf balls are made for more loft. So
Okay. And get fitted for clubs.
Exactly. No question. Yeah. That is... And actually get fitted for balls. I mean, Bridgestone has made an entire marketing strategy out of making sure that you get your ball fit to your game.
And is that legit or is that marketing?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, the fact is, and we've had them in our stores and we do that, but the fact is if you go in and you do a Bridgestone fitting, 76% of the Bridgestone fittings, believe it or not, Fred, this will knock you over. They are going to recommend a Bridgestone ball.
No.
I mean, yes. I mean, it's absolutely. Actually, what's amazing is there's 24% that they recommend something else. But Titleist is starting to do ball fittings as well, and they don't even look at any other ball. They're basically saying, we're going to find which Titleist ball is right for you.
Well, they make a lot of different product. And that was the other question that I was leading to with this, is it that Titleist has such a commanding market share because of quality of product or product placement or marketing dollars?
It used to be all three. I would say now the quality of product still is there, but the other guys have come up significantly as far as quality. And as I said, I think even Titleist would admit that the gap has narrowed a lot from quality from what Titleist and Cobra or Titleist and Callaway and Srixon and Bridgestone and all those guys they're all very, very similar now. And that's why, you know, you see Phil Mickelson very comfortable playing with a Callaway ball. You see Jim Furyk winning with a Srixon ball. And these guys wouldn't play these products if they didn't perform. I mean, they really have to be comfortable with this product. But I do think Titleist it has a tremendous image within the community, and the customer walks in and he's looking around and he reads the backs of boxes and he sees that all these premium balls are $45, and I know Titleist is good because most of the tour plays with it, and I know it's been around forever, so I'm going to buy Titleist. And
know that most of the tour plays with it because I see commercials while I'm watching that say, the only ball that you actually ever notice on when you're watching a PGA Tour event on television is when Tiger's Nike ball slowly drops into the cup.
Yep.
And I guess Nike's become a major player because of that.
They have. I mean, their Nike One ball is you could take, you know, any of these guys' premium products, the Nike One, the Callaway Tour IZ or IX, the Srixon Z-Star, the Titleist Pro V, the Bridgestone 330. I mean, all of these are phenomenal products, and for most of us, if we put blindfolds on or if we had white balls that didn't have an identification on it and just went out and played with them, we'd be very, very hard-pressed to make it to see a difference in what's going on. They're phenomenal balls, and all of them have multi-layers. These are the more expensive balls we talked about that have multi-layers that keep the spin away at the tee box, and they spin more as you get closer to the green. So that's really the optimal ball, and you think about, you know, in the olden days, what you really wanted to do is tee off with a top flight and then put a Titleist down as you get closer to the green because they spin. You know, you don't have to do that anymore. So, you know, what I tell people when they're looking at golf balls and saying, what do I want to spend? You can get a really good golf ball for $25. And it's probably going to go within four or five yards of the $45 ball. The difference will be when you get closer to the green, if you feel that it's really important for you to hold that green when that shot hits the green, it may be worth your while to spend a little more to get one of the more high-performance balls.
But isn't that skill? I mean, isn't that – because, like, I still have not been able to figure out how to get a backspin on the ball, how to get it to, like, you know, bite and stop. Occasionally I do it. I'll go, oh, look at that. The ball only traveled, you know, from the hole in the green there. It only traveled 12 inches after that. How did I do that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, because you're coming straight down on it. I mean, that's the trick with that, because you do a very descending blow. But I don't know how to do it either, Fred. I'm in your same category. I'm not talking about you know, hitting the green and then zipping back 15 yards. I'm talking about, and we've all had these shots where we think, wow, this is a really good shot. It's coming right on the green, and it hits the green, and then bam, bounces right off and goes off the green, and you're now 15 yards over the green, and you're going, man, did I get hosed on that deal?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what we're trying to avoid. Right. We're trying to, if you hit the green, we want to stay on the green. I'm not necessarily saying you're going to be hitting the pin, but let's at least make sure we stay on the green. And that's what some of these higher performance balls will do.
I'm at your website right now, ostads.com, and I'm looking at Titleist balls specifically, and I see a price range that goes from $20 to $46.
Mm-hmm.
And who, if I'm a, let's break it down to the different types of golfers, who would be paying for what, and what should they be looking towards? Is it based on your handicap? Is it based on how often you play? How should you base purchasing a golf ball? Because I think that's really what we should be getting down to, is who should be buying what?
Right. If you look at the Titleist product line, first of all, obviously their premier product is the Pro V1 and the Pro V1X. The only difference between those two balls is the Pro V1X is made for a guy with a faster swing speed. So it's a harder ball, and you need to have 105 to 110 mile an hour swing speed to take advantage of that. If you don't, the ball's not going to compress on the driver, and it's going to feel more like a rock. So Pro V1X is more for a better player who's got higher swing speeds. The Pro V1 is the multi-layered ball that, and they will tell you that the Pro V1 is not necessarily for a guy that's 10 handicap or below, but it does have the ability to reduce spin off the tee box and give you more spin as you get closer to the green. Hmm. Now, if you don't want to spend $45, and this is a little dirty little secret all the Golf Smarter listeners will listen to, one of the best values in golf, it actually comes right out of the same plant as the Titleist ball and has a lot of the same properties, is the NXT Tour. And that sells for $29.99, and it is a phenomenal product. It performs very, very similar to the Pro V1, but it's substantially less expensive. Mm-hmm.
Do you know people over at Titleist? Do you communicate with people at Titleist on a regular basis?
Sure.
Can you tell them something that maybe somebody will have some influence? I personally don't understand, how can you name a ball? Pro V1, to me, stands for provisional. Pro V, provisional. I will not hit a ball that I'm intended to lose, especially if I have to pay $46 for it.
Okay. I will pass that on, Fred. But, of course, in their mind, you know, if we had a water-seeking golf ball, it would be the best thing for all of us because you'd have to buy more balls.
Good for you.
And if I were a course designer, I would use the 17th at TPC Sawgrass as a model because you would need 4 dozen balls for every round, which personally I would love. I mean, I think that would be great.
Yeah, well, that's your business.
Exactly. I want to sell more balls, man.
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to do.
What about bringing balls out of the water? What about all those people who fetch used balls and they find old balls and they put them in their bag and they don't care what they hit? Is that a good idea?
Well,
I'm asking
it
a retailer.
On how serious you are on golf. I have one of my best friends is a doctor who makes lots of money, but I have to continually get him to continue to move because he's one of these guys that was more interested in fishing balls out of the water with his retriever. And I finally say, you know, you can afford balls. I'll find you some discounted balls. Just let's keep moving, you know.
Right.
The problem with, you know, hitting a water ball is you don't know how long it's been in there. And the properties will definitely start to break down, and you will lose distance. And even if you buy some rewashed, I mean, many times they've been painted over. There was a big lawsuit on that, and whether the company that reclaimed these balls can actually put the Titleist logo back on it.
Hmm.
And Titleist lost that lawsuit.
Really?
It is a Titleist ball. And they are promoting it as a rewash ball. But the problem is you don't know how long it was sitting in the water. It might have been sitting there for, you know, 5 months. And if that's the case, you lost some significant performance. So for some people, it may not be that big a deal. We sell them, and we sell a lot of them. And if you want a good value, they're there. But, you know, from my perspective, golf is a difficult game to begin with, and there's a lot of things involved. I don't want to have to worry about the fact that I hit a great shot, but it didn't do what I wanted it to because I happened to be too cheap and I spent $3 less than I should have for some balls that are going to perform more consistently. So that's from my perspective. But yeah, again, there's definitely a market for it. There's and a lot of people buy them. So.
And what about those guys who keep a couple dozen balls in the trunk of their car all year long? Does that have any impact on, you know, sitting in the trunk for months on end?
It does. In fact, we used to sell. This is going way back. We used to sell a ball heater. You'd plug it into your cigarette lighter, and you could put two balls or three balls in there, and you'd heat them up to like 110 degrees, and they would go about 10 to 15 yards farther. So the warmer the ball is, the farther it's going to go. You know, the colder the ball, obviously, the less it's going to go. So there is a difference there. But as you're changing the temperature, and sometimes in a trunk, you know, it can get to 150, or it can get, you know, dramatically colder than that. I wouldn't recommend that. I'd try to protect those and. But yeah, there makes a big difference with the temperature, no doubt about it. So
interesting, interesting.
One other thing on I should mention, because I mentioned the Pro V1X is for guys with faster swing speeds. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I didn't say that there are guys with slower swing speeds. And for a majority of the golfers, if you play with a regular flex, these are gonna all work well for you. But I need to mention a little bit about compression, because that's a really confusing part of the golf ball. Compression was actually rated when back in the wound days, and they would rate how tight they wound the golf ball with the rubber bands. Now they just do the bounce and they figure out how soft the ball is as it comes off the club face. If your swing speed is say 80 to 85, you should seriously look at a lower compression ball, like the Titleist has a product called the DT Solo, which is a lower compression ball that does very well. Bridgestone has an RX ball. Nike has a Karma ball. Wilson has a 50-50. That means it's a 50 compression ball. These are balls that even if you have a slower swing speed, you're getting that click off the ball. Because it's softer, it's going to be able to compress, and you're going to get the distance out of it. So if you have a slower swing speed, if you're a senior, if you're a woman, or if your swing speed just happens to be a little slower, I would really recommend a lower compression ball.
Well, it's so interesting.
Or you might be a golfer. Go ahead.
I was saying, on your site here, you have the DT Solo, and they're only $20 for a box. You have the Men's Karma. You have a sale going right now. For I don't know how long the sale is going to be if people, you know, check it out, but $12 here.
There's some incredible deals. I mean, you can buy balls right now for under 70 cents a ball, or you can get the Pro V1, which is about $4, $4.50 a ball. So, and there's everything in between.
And what's an X out? What does that mean?
Like an X out is a menu. It is a brand new ball. It has never been hit. But a manufacturer, for one reason or another, has determined that there is some minor flaw in the ball, and so they make it an X out.
Oh, okay.
Again, between us girls, a number of these balls are brand new balls that have no problems with them. The manufacturer just had excess capacity, and he wanted to keep the machines running, so he made them into X outs too.
Yeah.
So there's some bargains on X outs as well, but. Typically, if there's a major flaw, they will just destroy it. And I've been through the Titleist plant, I've been through the Callaway plant and Nike, and if they don't pass a certain test and they're very stringent, they just get destroyed and they start all over again.
But the next out is
a brand new ball, just should have a minor flaw in it that should not affect the performance.
Are you familiar with Jelly Bellies? You know, the jelly beans? Candy treats.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they have the Jelly Belly plant's only about an hour or so from where I live, and they have their seconds, like X outs, you know, that are not exactly perfect. They call them belly flops.
Nice. There you go. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, fine. So now, what about the difference of range balls? I mean, we'll go out on the range and we'll hit balls and we're thinking, okay, I'm hitting my 6-iron 150 yards today out on the range, but then I go out to the course and, oh, I have a 150-yard shot to pull the 6-iron, and all of a sudden it's flying over the green.
Yeah. Range balls are a tough deal because the golf course, you know, he's going to get you to buy a bucket of balls regardless. So unless you're at a really high-end course, there are potentially two problems. One is that he may be buying a lower quality ball that doesn't go very far. Secondly, there are balls that are restricted flight balls. Mm. And for a golf course that doesn't have a very long range, or doesn't want the kid in the ball collector deal to have to drive, you know, way off to the edge, they'd use these restricted flight balls. And yeah, so you need to ask, are these restricted flight balls? So you'll know, because you're trying to dial in what, you know, what you hit a 7-iron on, and if they're restricted flight balls, they could be 20% less than what a regular ball is. And then also, some of these range balls are potentially 2-3 years old, and they've been hit numerous, you know, thousands of times. They're not going to perform that well. So you got to be a little careful. I mean, you definitely want to go to the range. You want to practice. You want to work on your game. But I wouldn't worry a huge amount about exactly what that ball is doing, because okay, sometimes it may not be your swing that's making that ball go left or right or go 10 yards less than you normally hit it. So I wouldn't be too worried about that.
And one of the products that you have on your website is the Titleist Pro V1 practice ball at significantly less money. What does that mean, and should I be buying that to play golf with?
No, you probably shouldn't. It says practice on the side. It has basically it's going to actually it's a similar ball, but it has some, you know, as far as the quality goes, you have the regular balls, you have X'd outs, and then you have practice, which means don't go play with this. There are some issues with this ball that are probably going to affect your ultimate problem. In fact, we have a note on the website that says may have cosmetic defects, blemishes, or other imperfections. So you're not going to get the same consistency and quality that you will with a practice ball that you would with the regular Titleist product. But if you're looking to find a ball that you can just go out and hit and you can work on it, yeah, it's a great deal.
Srixon seems to have become one of the significant players, I guess, because we're seeing advertising for them now, and we're seeing tour players making endorsements on Srixon balls. And I'm seeing more people play with the Srixon. Are they also manufactured by somebody else, or are they unique among themselves?
They're unique among themselves. They're a very, very large company out of Japan, and last year they purchased Cleveland. So we're getting these major conglomerates now of golf. So Srixon is the mothership, and they own the Cleveland Golf Company. So you're seeing, that's why you see Vijay Singh playing with Srixon, and he also has Cleveland Clubs and Boo Weekly and Jim Furyk and all that. So you're getting these kind of package deals, and Srixon is a phenomenal product. It is exceptional. It's a goofy name. They actually invented it themselves, but it's the name. I don't know how they came up with it, but it is a great product. And one of the things that we're finding that they introduced the Srixon Yellow, which I don't know if you remember, a long time ago, yellow was a big fad, and Jerry Pate won a tournament and jumped into the lake using a yellow ball. And the perception back there 15, 20 years ago was that yellow was going to take over white, because every study that they've ever done, except in the fall when you get leaves all over the ground, is you can follow a yellow ball better than you can a white. Well, Srixon, after all of these years, has just come out with a Srixon Z-Star Yellow for $39.99. It's their premium ball, so it's $5-6 less than the Pro V1. Phenomenal product. I played with it last week, and I was amazed at how much easier it was to follow and find a yellow ball instead of a white ball. And it's selling like crazy. I mean, I can't keep them. Right now, we're out of them. They're doing really well. So, but Srixon as a brand does the same thing as everybody else. They have the premium ball that's multi-layered. They have the mid-priced ball that has usually has the urethane cover, but it may not have all the layers with it. And then they usually have a two-piece Sirlin covered ball, or ionomer, as many of them call it, that's a lower priced. So it really doesn't, and regardless of the manufacturer, you're going to see kind of similar offerings. And then they'll usually have a lower compression ball, and then they also have the Srixon Z-Star X ball, which is for the higher swing speeds.
Interesting. Now, personally, the only time that I use, and I don't know why, you know, you think you have a colored ball, it's not white, you're being a sissy or something, but when I use a colored ball, it's generally when I'm hitting on a fairway that runs parallel with a driving range.
Mm-hmm.
That way, I can find the yellow ball a lot easier.
You know, Fred, next time you go out, you should just do a whole round with some yellow balls, and you will be amazed. And, of course, the other nice thing is if you're playing with a foursome, if you're the only guy with yellow, obviously you don't have to even worry about even marking your ball because you know which one's yours. But no, they've done test after test, and even the guys that only have white balls will admit that a yellow ball is much easier to follow, much easier to find,
and
which reduces the number of balls you need.
Right, exactly. So well, not if you hit it in the water or not in the woods. I mean,
that's
if you can't find it, you can't find it. Right.
That's true.
And what happens when you lose a ball out in the woods or in the water? What is the impact to the environment on golf balls? Is there one?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is a huge industry. We talked earlier about the rewash balls, and there is a huge industry. Virtually every golf course has either a relationship with a reclaiming company or they do it themselves. Well, they'll come in once or twice a year. They'll go through all the water hazards. They'll clean all the balls out, and then they'll grade them. And they'll package them up and sell them based off of the grade and what quality they are and all that. So I would expect that the impact on the environment would be very small because hopefully if they're doing their job right, they're cleaning those water hazards and they're cleaning the rough out well enough so that those balls get recirculated fairly quickly.
Well, I bring that up because I would be remiss not to talk about the Dixon balls that we've done some partnering with Dixon Earth and the ball that they have. That if you become a Golf Smarter member at a certain level, you can get a box of the Dixon Earth balls with the Golf Smarter logo. And they claim that these are the first eco-friendly, tournament-quality eco-friendly golf ball. They're generally $40 a box, but we have them discounted for our listeners. And that they have no – what they say is they have no harsh metals in these balls, and they're not – they're not biodegradable, but they have no metals that are going to harm plants or animals if they sit out there for a long period of time. Are you familiar with those
balls?
That's
very cool. I'm not familiar with those. That's very cool.
Well, I'll put you in touch with these guys.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And I love the ball. I mean, before I was actually playing an NXT Tour, and then I started playing the Bridgestone E6, right? So those are, I guess, a comparable ball. Right, and then I moved to this Dixon Earth, and it plays to me just as well as those did, and I feel a little bit better about it. You know.
Well, there you go. I mean, there's, and that's one
I
of
lose
the cool
balls.
Things.
I mean, I will lose balls. There's no question about
that
it.
It makes my heart skip when you say things like that, Fred. That's awesome. That's awesome. When I'm playing with people and their ball goes into the woods, I just say, forget it. Let's move on. Let's move on.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So.
Oh, man. Yep. I have so many more questions about golf balls. But, you know, we don't have all that kind of time in the world to do this. Let's just real quickly, if we could do a summary here. If you're a handicap of, let's go, what, 20 and up.
Mm-hmm. You don't want spin. You want to make sure that at least you don't want spin off the tee box because that's going to cause you a lot of problems. You still can play some of the higher quality balls, and the manufacturers will tell you that. It isn't necessarily that the Strixon Z-Star or even the Pro V are only for lower handicap, but a lot of those folks may not want to invest that kind of money, particularly if you're a 20 and up handicap, you're going to go through a few more balls. And there are some very, very good two-piece balls that have Sirlin covers that are going to give you good distance. The only thing you're sacrificing is as you get around the green, it will be more difficult for the ball to bite and stay on the green. But there are some very, very good balls. Or you could do, like I mentioned, the NXT Tour ball is actually a urethane cover. It's a three-piece ball, so it's going to react, and it's $29.99.
Okay, if you're a 12 to a 20 handicap and you play two to four times a month, three to four times a month.
I think then, again, it's more of a budgetary concern. If there are some great balls, the Strixon Tri-Speed, the NXT Tour under $30 are going to perform very well. If you want to be able to get the same kind of, and I'm saying you have to have a swing like that as well, but if you want to really get the performance, you can upgrade to some of these premium balls that the pros are using, and it's not going to be able to do everything that the pros can do, but you're going to be able to see less spin off the tee box, more spin as you get around the green. So again, it isn't necessarily a handicap issue. It's really more kind of how much do you want to spend and how serious do you want to be.
Really? So you shouldn't even those single-digit handicap players who probably playing more golf than they're working, but they don't get paid to play golf. They still have to go out by that. You're saying that Pro V1 would be a good choice, but not necessarily the best choice.
No, and we recommend a lot of times, buy a sleeve of balls and try some of these other products. See if you like them. Buy a sleeve of the Trixon or buy a sleeve of the Nike One and see how they feel off of your club face. There's a lot of golfers that are more feel golfers, especially as you get around the green, and they want to be able to make it feel good, and it's more of a psychological thing. Personally, I am not a feel golfer. People say, how's that feel to you? I'm like, I don't know. Feels like a golf ball hitting my club. I don't know. What am I supposed to feel like? But, everybody's a little bit different. But performance-wise, and this gets back to the comment I made at the beginning of the show, these balls have gotten so much better that ultimately distance is not much of an issue. You're going to see only about a 4 to 6 yard difference unless your swing speed is less than 80 or more than 105. So that means about the 80 to 90% of us that are in between that, you're not going to see a whole lot of distance difference with any of these balls.
Hmm.
And that's the major change that has happened in the last few years.
Interesting.
So it used to be that everything was distance. This ball goes farther, this ball goes farther, this ball goes farther. And you don't even see manufacturers in their ads say that much anymore.
Right.
They're not bragging anymore that we're the longest, because they realize that all these tests are showing that these balls really are only 4 to 6 yards difference, so it's not that big of a deal.
We had a custom club maker on the show one time, and he was talking about this whole thing about how does it feel. He says it's actually the sound.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't really tell the difference when you're, of the feel
right.
of hitting a golf ball. It's what it sounds like coming off the club face.
Yep.
And that's the
I
one thing
that
you really do have a relationship with that is a constant.
And that's, there's been some very, very good drivers that have been developed over the years. Callaway had some drivers earlier that were actually pretty good, but the sound was so bad we couldn't give them away because people would hit them and they'd go, yeah, I hit it right down the middle, but man, that thing sounded so bad. I'm not going to hit this thing.
Well, right. I remember the first square head driver that Nike came out with, I hit it early on, and it was like, oh, it sounded like I was playing in a college World Series or something.
Exactly.
Like baseball.
It sounds like you're at home plate and you're grounding out to third. And,
yeah, really didn't
you don't
like
want
the sound.
You don't want that sound.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing the things that are, with all the other things we got going on in our head, we're also thinking about the sound as well. So,
yeah.
You said golf was an easy game. There's a lot of things.
For some people it is, and I hate them.
You and me both, Fred. I'll tell you that.
Well, Dave, tell us about Osted's Golf. It wouldn't be fair to have you come on talk this long without promoting what you do and what your family's been doing for a long time and how we get to find
you.
Well,
I believe,
why we should
Fred,
be shopping with you.
I believe that we are the oldest family-owned golf retailer in the United States. My dad started it in 1963. We were a family business. My mom typed up the first catalog, and we started because my mom's brothers started a manufacturing company in Chicago called Ram Golf. And my dad started selling some of those products out of the trunk of his car as he was going around selling insurance. And then he realized he could actually make more money doing that than insurance, so he quit his insurance gig and started doing golf full time, and we really exploded when he came up with the idea of doing a catalog, and we were the very first golf catalog in America, and he got yellow pages of all the major companies or all the major cities in the country, and sent a postcard out saying, I got a catalog if you want it, send them back to his postcard, and before you know it, we became the largest golf retailer in the country as well. We were selling to all 50 states. We translated our catalog into foreign languages and had 24-hour service and all that stuff. So today, after all of the changes, and actually I sold the business and then bought it back and we're rebuilding it and all that, we have 10 retail stores all in the upper Midwest. We have a website, osteds.com. We do catalogs and mailings and all the same things that my dad started with of quality and service and taking care of the customer are all there, still there today. So.
And what happened to the in-laws with Ram Golf?
Well, that's another interesting story. They sold the business, and Ram is now a house brand for our friends at Sports Authority. So what was a very premium, very high quality, very incredible brand is now being used as a kind of an introductory package set line. So you can only get Ram products at Sports Authority, but it was started by my uncles.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's how a lot of the evolution of these brands end up. McGregor was the biggest brand in golf for a long time, and now it's a house brand for Golfsmith.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they're
you know,
not
kind of like goes.
Yeah. Well, that's in the industry itself. Oh, we don't even want to get started on the state of the industry. Again, another show that we're going to have to do at some point.
There you go.
Well, Dave, so everyone knows it's AUSTADS, Austad's Golf, AUSTADS.
Yes, just austads.com will get you there, AUSTADS.com. Get you to the website. I'm a humble guy, Fred, but I have a write-up on golf balls. If you just click golf balls there, you can see my write-up that kind of summarizes a little bit of what we've been talking about, because it is a confusing category. I mean, and I don't think the manufacturers have done a great job really educating people. They all want to, in some cases, I think they purposely try to confuse you to try to get their ball looking better, and I think we do a disservice to the golfer because it shouldn't be that difficult. And a customer, you know, will look at our website or will come into the store and he'll see 100 different options and he goes, I don't know, throws up his hands and grabs a dozen Titleists. Because that's pretty much what happens.
Yeah, because they've seen the name.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the price point, everybody being the same, you know, it's like Bridgestone, wait, they make tires. What?
Yeah. Well, Bridgestone, the other interesting thing is Bridgestone, because a lot of these manufacturers, we mentioned Srixon, Bridgestone, they are large companies. They got a lot of money behind them.
And Nike.
And Bridgestone this year, and Nike is exactly. Golf is a very small part of their whole program, and they're going after this. They are, and actually, TaylorMade is owned by Adidas, so they got a lot of money behind them as well. And all these guys are kind of making a mad dash for market share. So you're going to see some deals. This is actually a great year to be a golfer because you're going to see some incredible ball deals. That are actually some right now. You can get two dozen Karmas for 20-some bucks and free personalization going on. Even our friends at Titleist have kind of loosened up, and whereas they never discounted before, I think you're going to see some nice opportunities with Titleist as well. So it just shows you that the industry continues to look for market share, and these guys are doing everything they can to try to keep that market share. So
I know that we have listeners in various parts of the world. Does Austad's ship globally?
We do. We have orders every day from all over the world, and we do have an international department that can figure out freight and shipping, and lots of great deals. And the deals are even better if you translate to shipping it overseas. So we do that all the time.
Well, I encourage everyone in the audience. I know that you each have various questions, whether it's about golf balls or golf equipment. I encourage you to go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Hey Fred button. And select what kind of equipment question that you have and let me know, and I will be happy to forward it to Dave, and he will come back with a response to both of us, so we'll have it. And I'll not only forward you the message that Dave replies with, but I'll post it on the Golf Smarter blog with the question and the answer. So if you have a question, maybe somebody else has the same question. But, Dave, I hope that you wouldn't mind if people send you emails from
not
the
at
audience.
All. I'm a lonely guy, Fred. I love mail. I would love to get that. It's great.
Oh, yeah. You're not busy at all. How many stores you
have? No, nothing going on.
Yeah, how many stores you have there?
We have 10.
10, okay. Yeah, there's nothing to do. You got other people taking care of
you.
You're
going to
go play golf now, right? You got to go. You got to go play golf.
Exactly. I got a tee time, man. I got to go.
All right, Dave, thanks so much. Really was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you spending. We took a whole hour.
Did we really?
You talk a lot, man.
You need to quiet down.
That's the problem. I had so many questions, a full hour. And you know what? This is going to be a members-only episode, so you guys are all lucky. We're gonna tease the non-members with this one. And if they don't join to hear this whole show, they're crazy. Because this was really, really information-packed and valuable information, a great education, and we really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure, Fred. Always a joy. Let's get out and play.
Oh, I'd love to play with Dave, but do you really think he has any time to play golf? I should have asked him. How often do you get to play golf? And don't forget, we have that exclusive offer on Dixon Earth golf balls. He doesn't carry them, but we do. And it's for our members only. And it allows you to purchase two boxes and get the third one for free. Only at the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com. I do want to remind you again about making sure you go directly to Golf Ahoy at golfahoywest.com to plan your next golf adventure. Whether it's a family vacation, a corporate event, or your annual trip with golf buddies, Frank Rogers at golfahoywest.com can take care of all of your travel and golf in one booking. Golf travel can be so frustrating. Oh my God, the hours of research that's required, and then not having everything work out to the exact schedule that you need. It's so frustrating to do that kind of booking, but that's what makes Frank Rogers and the folks at Golf Ahoy West such an asset. He knows the industry people, and he knows the best locations all over the world. So click on the email Golf Ahoy tab at the top of golfsmarter.com and start your conversation with Frank today, please. It's Golf Ahoy at golfahoywest.com. Quality people help you do your golf travel. We close today with another reason why we love golf, and that's the belief that the magic you found in a new driver will last forever. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or reasons why you love golf, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.